Hi everyone, I'm Colby Horton.
And I'm Frank Yamada.
And we'd like to welcome you to another episode of Engaging in the Next, an original podcast series from Association Briefings, where we talk about what's next for the association community when it comes to technology, MarCom strategy, people, membership, and money. Well, Frank, this is our final episode of 2023, and we all know what that means. It's time to start talking about New Year's resolutions.
I didn't know where you're going with that, so I got a little scared. I kind of feel like I need to buy some gifts before I have these talks, but let me think.
Any time now, Frank.
Well, now.
You know what? I'll go first. So, outside of laying off some occasional binge eating of Sour Patch Kids, I plan to step up my professional social media game. So that's right, Frank, I'm embarking on some hashtag personal branding. So, what do you have?
Hey, perfect. Thanks for buying me some time. My New Year's resolution is to have my New Year's resolutions by our January episode, Colby.
All right, fair enough, and well played. So this time of year is always crazy busy, so sometimes it's hard to think about January. But you know what else happens in December? It's grant writing season. Yes, that magical time when organizations are looking for opportunities to secure funding for their projects. However, we get it. The holiday hustle is real, and the thought of diving into grant writing amidst all the festivities can be quite intimidating. And that's why we've got a special episode lined up for you today. We've brought in an expert in the field to guide us through the intricacies of grant writing, providing valuable insights and tips to make this process a little less daunting. So, Frank, who do we have on the show?
Today we're joined by Shelley Vassar-Gilliam, who serves as the Director of Development for Community Lodgings, a direct service nonprofit whose mission is to lift individuals and families from homelessness and instability to self-sufficiency and independence by providing traditional housing, permanent, affordable housing, and youth educational programs. She's responsible for fundraising, donor and stakeholder cultivation, and public relations. Welcome to the podcast, Shelley.
Thank you so much, Frank. Good to see both of you.
It's great to see and great to have you. And to kick things off, could you share your career journey for our listeners?
Absolutely. And I just want to say, I'm so excited to be here with you today and on this last episode of 2023. My career journey started many years ago, I'll say it that way. And it started while actually I was in college, and I spoke with someone who offered me a job to come work with her in her office. I actually went to her, didn't know her, but I went to her office and I offered to volunteer to help her on a student event. And we talked for nearly an hour, and she said, "You can help me, but more importantly, do you need a job?" And I said, let me think about that. She said, okay. And I went away for several months and I came back and I accepted the job. I worked for her my senior year in college and 3 years afterwards. And what I thought would start out as me just working in the meetings and events industry at my university, my alma mater, I should say, Virginia Tech, ended up being 3 more years after graduating. And I moved from there to association, working for a trade association here in Washington, D.C., and I was responsible for meetings and events with that trade association. Flipped over to the other side, what we call the supplier side, and I worked in food and beverage for a little while, planning social events, corporate events. And then I decided to get into sales, still on the supplier side, and ran with sales for a number of years, both in the conference center space, the food and beverage spaces, in catering, and in hotels at the NSO level. And then I rebranded myself, we could say, and moved into nonprofit direct service philanthropy. And after that, started my business and have been working with direct service organizations as well as trade associations and other organizations since I started my business, which was about 13 years ago. And now, today, currently, I am working for a direct service organization as a development director and passionate about the work that we're doing in the community. So that's a high level of what happened, how my career came about. But it started with meetings and events. And right now, today, I am a development director and an entrepreneur, but a development director with a direct service nonprofit.
Excellent. I love the word rebranding of yourself. So this particular episode, we're going to talk a lot about grant writing. And I think that's something that a lot of associations and nonprofits, especially this time of year, we're busy getting our grants ready to be submitted. And during our pre-show, I love that you talked about grant writing in terms of storytelling, that grant writing is all about storytelling. So can you elaborate on why this narrative aspect is crucial in the grant writing process?
Absolutely, Colby. Grant writing is about telling a compelling story. Mm-hmm. So there's something that occurred in your organization, in the story of your organization with your mission, and then there's that middle section where you're giving a lot of context, and then you're talking about your outcomes, your results, and hopefully your impact. It's important to include the narrative because if you don't, then you just have a bunch of facts and figures. So let me give you an example. Years ago, when I first started writing grants, what would happen is we would just throw out a bunch of figures and statistics and think that was grant writing and it was important for the funder to know that. And it is important for the funder to know that. But if I told you that we served 500 and another organization doing like direct service work, similar direct service work serves 1,000. And I said, 100% of our students graduated and moved on to the next grade level, 500, 1,000. If I said 80% of them were proficient in English language and in vocabulary and in other aspects, 80% of 500 would be 400 and 80% of 1,000 would be 800. Funders may look at that and say, they're serving more people, so we're going to help them. That doesn't and shouldn't negate the 400 who, in that particular example, the 400 who became proficient in English language and the 500 who graduated and moved on to the next level. We're serving people. And people are always first in my book. And so no matter whether you're serving 400, 500, or 1,000, if we only looked at metrics as the measurement or statistics and we didn't tell a story around it, which is why the narrative is important, then we lose a lot in terms of what the funder needs to know. An organization that's serving 1,000 people versus an organization that's serving 500 people, no less important or impactful. So looking at goals, looking at impact, looking at outcomes is all part of grant writing. And I like to joke and say we can take three words and make them 500 characters. A good grant writer can do that. Three words and we'll make it into 500 characters. You have to be able to tell a compelling story that's going to pull at the heartstrings of the funder, but also that showcases more than in FY23, we did this and we had 23% of our 23%. What does that really mean? We have to be able to tell the story around it.
Shelley, that was a great example that you gave. Are there any other examples or experiences you've had where a compelling story played a significant role in securing a grant?
Yes, I would say even over my 15-year history of writing grants, I've been able to give tours of the organizations where I've worked, whether it's a center or a homeless shelter. And as I've done that and I've explained the work and the mission of the organization and helped people, the person whom I was giving the tour to, understand really the full impact of any donation that they would give, no matter how small. And what I found in, and even most recently, quite honestly, what I found in many cases is that energy and that passion, when it flows through at the end of some of those tours, very surprising, the organizations I've been working with in the past have been funded. We've been surprised with a, we're going to grant you this money, or we're ready, we're prepared to give you this amount of funding. That has happened. And it happens when that energy, that passion, that understanding for your organization and what you're doing shines through. And we're not only talking about 20% of this and 40% of that. We're talking about real people and lives. And we're saying we're serving right here in the community thousands of individuals who are at this income level. But let me tell you about what that means. That area median income for the city that this organization is in is X. We're serving people at 50 to 60% of X, right? And so that puts it in real terms rather than saying the area median income is just, for instance, $100,000 or something like that. Okay, that's a number, but tell the story behind that number. And it's when we've told the story, the full story behind the number, that we see funding come through. The other way, and this I learned through sales, my sales background, is relationships matter. Mm-hmm. In the meetings and events industry, we know relationships matter. We all have relationships with individuals. Whether we've moved from job to job, there are some relationships that have remained with us. And what I've discovered on the nonprofit side in direct service is that those same relationships that I've had for years in the meetings and events industry have transferred over to the work that I'm doing because people care about people and helping others in their community. So that's another part of the experience I think that I bring to the table from the for-profit side to the nonprofit side, but also how compelling stories really help. Those same individuals that I've had relationships with over and over, I'm telling them the same story I would tell a funder. And no matter whether they decide to buy a gift for a child, give a book to a child, or give a donation, no matter the size of the donation, I'm grateful for that. They're supporting the organization and they're doing it because I was able to expose them to an organization that in many cases, most of them were not familiar with. So it wraps around because you're telling a compelling story in order to get the support. And it doesn't matter whether the story is being told to a friend individually or to a group or to a house of worship or to a funder foundation. It's a story that needs to stick with the audience before whom you're speaking.
And Shelley, in your experience, how have you seen grant writing evolve over the past 5 to 10 years?
I'm excited to say grant writing has evolved in all the ways that I've just mentioned in terms of telling a better story, a more compelling story beyond the statistics, beyond the metrics or measurements that are used. Using more impact in your storytelling. So again, not just throwing out the numbers, but also saying, and the impact of that, so you're pulling that thread all the way through. The impact of that means that we've now changed the economic position of families into the next generation because we did this and this. I'm grateful for that. But from a technology standpoint, what's wonderful is that there was a time many years ago and even before my time where the reports were written out and grants were filled in using just a plain Word document. And now there are portals that you log into to complete the questions that are being asked, to upload your financial data and all the information that you need to, and that you can go back to, not in paper form, thank you, not in paper form at any time, and say, okay, last year we applied for this specific funding. This year, maybe we want to apply for that. You don't have to go to a file cabinet or to who knows what, or rely on whether or not someone used their personal email to access the profile. You can go directly to a portal and see everything that you've done year over year. And so I appreciate the fact that many funders have now gone to using this portal platform where all your information is uploaded. And in many cases, year over year, that just repopulates. So it also saves you some time as a grant writer when you're in your mission statement repopulates. Some basic information about your organization, your website, your phone number, your location, all those things just automatically come in. So I've seen that over the years, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm also grateful that the positioning has changed from what did you do and how many people to what was the impact of what you did. how does this change people's lives now and into the future? We have projected goals, we have outcomes or results, but it's really the impact and how it's changing people's lives that truly matters.
Shelley, grant writing can definitely be challenging. Obviously, technology helps out with the process, and storytelling is a great element to get success happening for you. But successful grant writers should probably be proficient in public speaking and writing, right? What can you tell someone who might be somewhat weak in one of those areas, but still have a passion for writing grants?
What we say is there's always room for improvement. We can all, each one of us, sharpen our skills. I have a public speaking as well as a writing background. I had to overcome some fears with both of those in order to get to this point in my life. But I look back on my journey and I had a fear of public speaking growing up, even with all the right training, if you will, or opportunities to speak in front of audiences. And at one point, at 17 years old in college, I was told that my writing was awful, even though I had the head of the English department as my English teacher in high school. And writing and English was reinforced at home as well in vocabulary and comprehension and different aspects of English. And so both of those stopped me really for a number of years from doing either one, because I was petrified. I was scared to speak in front of a group. I was scared to write anything beyond filling out a form. And over time, I realized I had to overcome both of those in order to be what I am today, which is a writer and a speaker, and using all of my skills. And in nonprofit, you are a fundraiser, which means you're also still planning events. You are forming relationships with donors and cultivating partnerships with businesses and their stakeholder engagement with the board. And so all of those skills I learned in my other life, I like to say. And so there are strategies for overcoming public speaking fears as well as writing. And the two primary strategies are you've got to speak and you have to write. In order to get over those, it is as simple as that. That's a good start. But there are ways you build yourself up to the point where you can stand on a stage and you can speak before an audience.
Sounds like your career came full circle then, right?
It did. From my days in performing arts, ballet, tap, acrobatics, and also in cheerleading and being a youth speaker, to melting down, to figuring out, okay, let me figure out how to overcome this fear. And what I did is I served on a panel first. That seemed the least intimidating because other people were on the stage with me. And then I became a moderator. Still, other people are on the stage with you. I introduced speakers. So typically there might be one other person on stage with you. And then I became a full-fledged speaker after that. With writing, a friend in the meetings and events industry asked me to write an article, and I said, oh, I can't write. I know, I'm not going to do that. And she said, oh, it's just a simple article about leadership, and you can do that. You talk about this all the time. And I wrote that article, and I realized, indeed, I can write. And that was something I had been suppressing a large percentage of my life at that point. And I've been writing ever since.
Because of that one person who said that you couldn't write. I'm glad you're back on track.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be back on track.
And Shelley, thank you for being a part of this conversation today. We really enjoyed having you on our podcast.
Thank you all for asking me to join the podcast today. This is awesome.
Now, we're going to put you in the hot seat one last time in the final segment we like to call the Briefings Minute. We're going to fire off a series of questions just to learn a little more about you. So just give us the first answer that comes to mind. You ready?
I am ready.
All right, here we go. So Shelley, you and I both share a passion for early 90s hip hop. Who are some of your favorite artists or groups from that era?
I liked A Tribe Called Quest and Biggie and Mace and the whole group there.
So much to choose from. As a fan of bird watching, which bird has been your top find?
Cardinal.
You can only pick one: avocado toast or guacamole and chips.
I am so not ready. Are you kidding?
You can only do one.
Well, it has to be the avocado toast. Almost anywhere I go, if it's on the menu and I'm feeling up to it, I will order that. But I will tell you, if avocado is on any dish on a menu and it's an item that I can eat, I will order that. It's like I go to a restaurant and I just look for what has avocado in it.
Okay, I have to follow up on this. What makes good avocado toast?
I think it's the sea salt, or you could put a little truffle salt on it. That would help.
Now I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
Let's move on to, where have you experienced the most beautiful sunset?
Always Cape May, New Jersey. But a good second runner-up is Maui.
Oh.
Yeah.
Both are beautiful.
They are. That's really tough. That's a tough one.
We bring the hard questions here, Shelley.
Now, what would be your dream public speaking gig?
Wow. I would love to do a TED Talk. Haven't quite worked myself up to that point yet, but I'm still sharpening my skills to be able to do a TED Talk. I would love to do that.
Excellent. Best of luck on that one. So you are our last guest of 2023. So we love to ask this question. What's a New Year's resolution you have for 2024?
Now, I want to, in 2024, start to work on that TED Talk for sure. I have some also educational goals, and the organization that I'm working with in this area called Community Lodgings, I really want to bring greater visibility and awareness for the work that they're doing around affordable housing and transitional housing. And so that's a big goal of mine, using my connections and my past experiences and skills in a way that really has people pointing in our direction, looking more closely at the work that we're doing and being willing to support it. A whole new group, hopefully, of supporters for the organization.
Excellent. Starts with those relationships, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Shelley, that's the buzzer today. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Colby. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate this time.
And thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of Engaging in the Next. Join us each month as we discuss trends that impact what's next in the association world. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And if you'd like more information about association briefings and how we can help you produce a podcast or unique data-driven newsletter for your association, be sure to visit us online at associationbriefings.com. See you next time.